Eat Drink Indiana Radio is made possible with support from Marigold Clothing, making fashion fun since 1989, in Broad Ripple, featuring women's clothing, gifts, and accessories, and committed to customer service. More on Facebook or at marigoldclothing.com. Eat Drink Indiana Radio is powered by eatdrinkindy.com. Eat local, drink local, eat drink indie. Welcome to You Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD to the Point. I'm your host, Jolene Ketzenberger. This week on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, we've got a bit of a business focus going. First, we'll talk with entrepreneur Jeremy Brown of Nameless Catering to hear how a business that started in the back room of a frozen yogurt shop has become a fast-growing catering company. We'll also hear from butcher shop owner Ryan West of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana, and find out how and why a young couple decides to launch an old-school butcher shop and what the reaction has been. And we'll also talk with Alan Walker of Pogue's Run Grocer, who was just named the new general manager of the Eastside Co-op. So stay with us for more here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI and WFYI.org. Today on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, I get to catch up with a local business that I first heard about in 2013. Almost 3 years ago, I interviewed a couple of guys with a unique story. They had started a pizza delivery business out of the back room of a frozen yogurt shop and were starting to get some attention, but partly because of the unusual name. Nameless Pizza was located in Fountain Square, and owners Jeremy Brown and Jason Manship were delivering to the downtown area, just growing by word of mouth, because it was a great story, right? A company called Nameless Pizza that used those "Hello, my name is" stickers on each pizza box. But as it turned out, Nameless Pizza made a name for itself by starting to cater business meetings and events, and then they needed a bigger menu, and then Nameless Pizza became Nameless Catering. Company co-founder Jeremy Brown tells us how it all began.
Jason and I are cousins, and he had a friend of his call and say, "Hey, we want to open a yogurt shop. Do you know anything about restaurants?" And Jason said, "No, I really don't know anything about restaurants, but my cousin does." And so he called me out of the blue one day and said, "Hey, you want to meet me at this yogurt shop in Fountain Square and tell these people if you think it's gonna work?" And I said, "Okay, sure, that's fine, you know, no big deal." So I went down there. I was like, "You know, buy me a beer or something, right?" And so got down there, and him and I walk in the back of this kitchen, and we're like, "What are you guys going to do with this space?" And they're like, "Oh, we're going to use it for storage." We're like, so he looks at me, I look at him, and we're like, "I don't think so." So, because we look, and there's a great big pizza oven, and there's a great big walk-in cooler, and a cold serving table, and a three-bay sink, and all these things you need to open a restaurant.
In the back of a yogurt ice shop. Cream store. It was already operating, right?
Yeah. Well, no, it had been an Egyptian restaurant, I think.
Right.
I think is what it was. But then they bought it out, and the ice cream shop was under construction. Right. So we made a deal with them to sublease for a percentage of our sales because we thought, well, if we don't sell anything, then we're not on the hook for anything. And so so they said they were friends of ours and that kind of thing. And they said, sure. So we made a deal with them. I don't even know if we actually ever signed a lease, but we made a handshake deal with them and said, "Hey, we're going to give you a percentage of our sales." And that's how we got started.
Now, explain the name a little bit.
Oh, everyone always asks me, I got to come up with a good excuse for that because, we're trying to come up with a name. Jason, I didn't like any of his names that he came up with. I thought they were all stupid. So I was sitting on my couch one night, it was about 11 o'clock on a Friday, probably had two or three beers at that point. And I said, "I know what it'll be. It'll be Nameless." I sent him a text and I said, "Hey man, how about Nameless?" And he goes, "That's actually really funny. I like it." Well, then I started thinking, well, wouldn't it be funny if we use the "Hello, my name is" stickers like you get at meetings and wrote all of the names of our foods on those, just like kind of as a branding thing. And he's like, "That's funny as heck." And so we then realized that the Nameless Catering Facebook, Nameless Catering Twitter, namelesscatering.com, well, at that time pizza, but they were both available. Nameless, everything was available because there was no Nameless Pizza. There is no Nameless Catering. So We didn't have to battle over any domains, which, as people know, is a big win. That's why you have goofy names companies. So yeah, that's it. I mean, I don't really have a better, I need to have like a bar fight story or something.
So tell me, when was that, and what was the vision for Nameless Pizza at the time?
We wanted to do something that a lot of folks in a lot of places in New York had, kind of like the speakeasy concept of like, you don't know what's there unless you know what's there type deal. We had no sign out front, which really fit in well with the whole nameless concept. No sign out front, no real advertising. We did a lot of like door to door, just kind of walk by like, hey, here's a coupon type thing. So like a lot of handouts, but we didn't do any mainstream advertising, radio commercial, anything like that, because we really wanted to, just see what it would be like to run this. It's kind of like I won't say a game, but we thought it'd be a fun side project. So yeah.
Now, when was that?
Gosh, I have to look at my calendar. 3-ish years ago, something like that. I can't remember the exact dates. It's all foggy.
So about 3 years ago, you were launching this pizza company, Nameless Pizza, in the back of a yogurt shop. How did that go? And how did it grow?
It went well. I mean, we were selling pizza. We were busy. We expanded our hours. We started, our original hours were Friday and Saturday from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m., Sunday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. was our original hours for pizza. And very quickly, it became obvious that we needed to expand those. So then we started opening Wednesday and Thursday. Then we started opening then the catering started. So then we were realizing, like, well, we got to be here Monday and Tuesday for catering anyway. Or not, and it wasn't catering. It was. Can I get 10 pizzas?
Right. So catering on a very small scale at first.
Well, yeah. It was. Hey, man, I really love your pizza. I got this business meeting, at Merrill Lynch or wherever. It doesn't matter. It's just some office downtown. Can I get 10 pizzas tomorrow? And it's like, well, we're not open on Mondays. But I was like, well, we are now. And so it was, because at that time, 10 pizzas at $15 a pizza was like, oh, wow, this is a big day for us, And so we started going in on Monday. Then we started going in every Monday to cook pizza. So it was like, which is open. So we actually started opening. We were open 11 to 7 or 11 to 10, 7 days a week for Nameless Pizza, but we were catering 90% of the time.
So how did you make that transition? What convinced you that the catering was where it needed to go?
Oh, there's more money in catering. That's I mean, it's just, and there's, I don't mean there's more money. I just mean that there, no, I do mean that, but there's, the margins are better. It's more controllable. You can, you can plan your days, you can plan your portioning, plan your weights, plan all that. Just your food cost is better. Your labor cost is better. The exposure, cause you're doing a 30 person lunch. That's 30 people that are trying your product. So
was it demand that prompted that shift?
It was demand, but I think the demand actually prompted more of the menu diversity. Salads. It was like, they just started saying like, hey, can you start including salads? Oh, okay, sure. Yeah, that's fine. And then, hey, can you start including desserts? I guess, sure. And then it was like, hey, can you start bringing drinks? And we're like, we don't, I mean, okay, that's fine. And then there was like, can you bring ice? Like, we don't have an ice machine. Like, what do I get? The store across the street, the liquor store across the street from the yogurt shop, they had to like triple their ice order because we're going over there every day buying like 20 bags of ice. And the guy's like, what are you guys doing over there? We're like, we don't know. We're just making it up. So it was the demand actually fueled the menu interest more than anything else. And then as the menu grew, the catering grew. And that's it.
So how did the menu evolve away from pizza?
Just once again, demand, interest. I mean, people, as our delivery territory expanded, we were going from Fountain Square, we were delivering to Kokomo, to Columbus, to Bloomington, to Richmond, Terre Haute, pizza doesn't travel that far. I don't care who you are. And unless you're bringing a Papa Murphy's, like pre-baked pizza, which I love Papa Murphy's, but, if you're going to cook a pizza and have it hot, it's not going to travel that far. Pasta in a heated hot bag absolutely does. And chili in a heated hot bag, absolutely. A soup does. Salads do, And of course, 2 liters, you're fine. I mean, we had a couple drivers with wet floorboards because they were taking a bag of ice all the way there. But, nothing we couldn't figure out. That's just kind of continued to evolve from there.
We've been talking with Jeremy Brown of Nameless Catering. We'll be back with more from Jeremy here on WFYI and WFYI.org. We are back here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, and we're talking today with local entrepreneur Jeremy Brown, co-founder of Nameless Catering, which has grown in less than 3 years to become one of the busiest catering companies in the state. But Nameless Catering got its start as Nameless Pizza in the back room of a Fountain Square yogurt shop. From there, the company started expanding its coverage area, and now it has 3 catering kitchens and has customers all over the state. In fact, Nameless Catering just recently expanded into Fort Wayne. But how did that all happen? Jeremy tells us how a business that started in a back room has grown into a catering company that's making a name for itself.
We started partnering like crazy.
Now, what do you mean by that?
Local groups, local organizations. So, you know, we're currently sitting in Launch Fishers, obviously, and Jason, my business partner, had a great relationship with John Wexler, who is the Launch Fishers, you know, I don't know, what's he, the captain, the king?
Founder
and CEO. Okay, there we go. I didn't know. Well, I didn't know what his preferred title was. So he basically got us hooked up with John, and it was like, hey, let's start, you know, providing pizza at Launch Fishers events. And then the opportunity came along, like, hey, we need an official pizza sponsor or, you know, food sponsor. And it was like, all right, let's do that. And so it was Launch Fishers. It was Speakeasy. It was most recently Z-Works, you know, Dreamopolis. I mean, like, honestly, the YMCA, like, we're a title sponsor of the YMCA. And so what we started to do is partner with all these organizations. And what that did is that just increased our exposure. And it was easier for us to do a great big sponsorship with the, not easier, but more cost effective and more logical to do a sponsorship with the YMCA or Launch Fishers to provide food, because then, of course, that's just marketing, right? Because in the restaurant world, what better way to sell your food than have people eat it? It's one thing to say this is the best pizza ever. It's another thing for someone to try the pizza and say, wow, this is the best pizza ever, and then they tell their friends.
But now pizza isn't part of the equation anymore.
It's not. It's always in our back pocket. We still have all the recipes. They're locked in a safe. No, they're not. They're in Google Drive. Pizza's not part of the equation. Catering is. We shut off pizza simply because the demand moved from pizza to other catering or to catering options and different menus. And there's a billion pizza places, right? But I mean, how many places can you order a full blown chili bar? Right? 3 different types of chili, sour cream, cheese, onions, all these different toppings. Where can you get a really awesome taco bar with homemade queso, not something out of a bag, or, you know, fresh ground beef, things like that? Where can you get, you know, your grandmother's meatloaf, but you wanted all that? I mean, so what we started doing is started realizing, like, yeah, there's 1,000 pizza places, but there's not 1,000 places like what we do. And so we killed it.
So explain to me what Nameless Catering does then.
So we cover the entire state of Indiana for delivery. We deliver, at this point, I think we've got 10 menu options available. They do rotate, right? So not every single one of my locations has every single menu item every day. So, you know, for example, it's the end of the winter, whatever season we're on, end of the winter. And, so chili's going away, but the salad bar, potato bar is going to replace it. And so we rotate these menu items around. We deliver to the whole state of Indiana. You call or text us 24/7 and we get it out to you on time and you have a great meal.
Now, how do you cover the whole state? I mean, you have to have several locations around, I suppose, and then work outwards from there?
Correct. Yeah. I mean, that's all it is really. It's just continued expansion. I mean, we haven't always covered the whole state. And we say we cover the whole state, and for the most part, we do. There are some areas right now that are tougher for us to get to just because of the distance. And if it's not necessarily tough to get to, there's certain menus that are better. So, like, you know, a chili bar in a heated bag will do very well because it's liquid, right? We don't necessarily want to send our burger bar too far because the burgers will dry out, right? So places like Maryville and Evansville are still a little tough. But by having Fort Wayne, Pendleton, and Plainfield, you know, we've got our Southwest, our Northeast, and our hyper-north location of Fort Wayne, and then more locations are coming.
How did all that grow? I mean, how did you know that you were going to grow so far? You know, when you started out in the little space in Fountain Square, did you see this coming?
No, not necessarily. I mean, it was, when we started, when we walked into the yogurt shop for the first time, we saw a pizza oven. No, I didn't think we'd have a multi-unit, full statewide delivery company that has, you know, dozens and dozens of employees and, you know, a full operations team and be partnered with some of the biggest and best organizations in the city. No, I didn't think that.
When did those sorts of when did that scale hit you that it could be that big?
Sometimes daily. It just depends on the day. If we have a really good day, then that day. If we have a really bad day, then not so much. No, I mean you know, opening Fort Wayne was a big move for us because it was our it's the first one that's not been within a half hour of my home or my business partner's home or any of our operational people's homes, whatever. So Fort Wayne was a big challenge, but because we had already done it a couple times and we kind of not perfected the business model by any stretch, but I would say come close to perfected the actual opening process. It was streamlined. It was smooth. I mean, I was aside from, you know, just some minor paperwork things with different government entities up there. It was smooth. I mean, it's different, right? Marion County is different than Allen County. It's just the way it is, you know, so you kind of deal with those things.
Are you surprised at the growth and what has happened along the way?
If you'd asked me that 3 years ago, yes. At this point, I'm thinking like, this is just the beginning, I think. Right. But I don't want to be cocky and say we're going to crush the world of catering. But no, I mean, hey, we're having fun. We're growing. We're continuing to grow. We're trying to be strategic and smart. We're not trying to rest. You know, I'm only 30 and my business partner, I think he's 57. No, I think he just had a birthday too. I should know this. He's either 33 or 34, but both of us have, can just go all the time. And, up at Z-Works, Dan Moyer, he's the founder up there and he'll come in at like, you know, Sunday at like, you know, 6 o'clock at night to check on something. He'll say, why are you here all the time? Because I live up in the Zionsville area. And it's like, why are you always here? I'm like, well, because this is what I do. And he's like, you like never stop. Did your wife ever see you? I was like, yeah, she sees me walking on my computer. We watch TV together. I just work on my computer. It's great. And my wife's awesome. She gets it. I mean, she understands it. And that's crucial, right? You got to have the buy-in from everybody in your household. You can't, if you're going to do something like this, whether it's owning your own business, owning your own restaurant, whatever it is, if you're not on the same page with other folks in your household, whether they're boyfriends, girlfriends, sisters, brothers, wives, husbands, doesn't matter. If you're not all on the same page and you're not all committed to it, then it's going to be rocky.
We've been talking with Jeremy Brown of Nameless Catering. For more information on the company, check out namelesscatering.com. I've said before here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, local food means a lot of different things, from restaurants and chefs to home cooks and canning enthusiasts to farmers and cheesemakers and, well, to all sorts of things. I've talked with a lot of food entrepreneurs here on the show, and I've covered a lot of food-related companies, everything from brand new businesses to big multi-state operations with roots in Indiana. We've gone to the farms and workshops and kitchens and offices to tell the stories of local food artisans and business owners who are somehow connected with local food. Like this week's interview with Jeremy Brown of Nameless Catering. That was fun because it gave us a look behind the scenes of a local company where the owners are really changing things up as they grow a business. But I have to say that when I first interviewed Jeremy and his business partner, Jason Manship, in a tiny kitchen in the back of a Fountain Square ice cream shop, I didn't really have much hope for the future of Nameless Pizza. But as we heard today, that startup pizza business quickly turned into a catering company, and Nameless Catering has grown to become one of the state's largest catering firms. That's pretty good for being in business for less than 3 years. But it got me thinking about other local companies that might be on the brink of succeeding in a big way. I know you're out there. In fact, we heard from jam maker Dee Alderman just last week, and I know there are a lot of other food entrepreneurs that I see at farmers markets, and lots that I'm looking forward to interviewing. But I'm not the only one who wants to hear from you. In fact, the hottest kitchen entrepreneur challenge is looking for food entrepreneurs, especially those that are just getting started. The challenge is sponsored by Ivy Tech Community College and by Reliable Water Services, and it features a startup category, for those with a new food business idea not yet to market, as well as an early stage category of 5 years or less for food entrepreneurs who have launched but are looking for help to get to the next level. So be thinking. Starting April 4th, aspiring chefs, home cooks, and early stage food entrepreneurs all throughout Indiana can enter online at reliablewater247.com/hottestkitchen by submitting a short application and uploading a photo of their recipe or product concept. And there are some pretty cool prizes involved. The grand prize winner in each category gets $2,000 in seed money from Reliable Water Services to help start their business, a $1,000 scholarship from Ivy Tech Community College, and $250 in product from Zesco.com Restaurant Supply. Plus, there are two People's Choice winners that receive $1,000 each from Shapiro's Deli. Now, finalists will be selected in late May to participate in a final judging event at Ivy Tech on June 22nd, where I'll be serving as MC. And even if you're not competing, it's cool to check out the businesses and see if you can pick the winner. In fact, the audience gets to vote on their favorites for the People's Choice Award. So if you're wondering if entering is worth it, Robert Carmack is last year's startup category winner and the owner of the Indiana Pickle Company, which makes beer and spirit-infused pickles. And he said the contest provided the push he needed. So think about it. And if you've got a fledgling food business, check out reliablewater247.com/hottestkitchen. And maybe I'll see you in June at the competition. All about local food here on Eat Drink Indiana Radio, but it's easy, especially in winter, to feel that it's harder to eat local. But locally raised meats are available year-round and becoming much easier to find. You'll find locally raised meats and products at area farmers markets. Farms like Tyner Pond Farm have a delivery service, and other local delivery services carry meats as well. But it's still great to stop in at a butcher shop and pick out what you'll have for dinner, ask questions, and maybe discover a new product you hadn't even considered. St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana is an old-school butcher shop that's been open about a year and a half right on the Courthouse Square. Owner and butcher Ryan West tells us how he and his wife Amelia decided to open St. Adrian and how the butcher shop operates.
The shop idea was we like to eat, so we learned to cook. I think when you get better at that, you know, you just keep learning and doing a little bit more, and then it was kind of okay, well, how do I continue to get better, and kind of really looked at ingredients. Both my wife Amelia and I grew up rural farming and on the farm, and so we always had gardens and, you know, around livestock and those kinds of things. And so several years ago, we had a freezer, kind of a small freezer meat business. We were finishing a few pigs for ourselves. People never believe me, but if you're feeding one pig, it's just as easy to feed 10. So we had...
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, it does. It sounds like one of those, you know, we have to see it to believe it, right?
That's right. But we had extra, and so it was kind of friends and family. Hey, does anybody need pork for their freezer? And so that's really where it started.
And now, when was that?
That would have been somewhere around like 2007-ish. All right. We moved to this area then, bought a small farm just because we liked that lifestyle. So for us, it was about obtaining the best quality stuff that we possibly could. We figured we'd just grow it ourselves. And so that kind of turned into a hobby. I love being outside and working with the animals anyway. We grow a big garden. We love summer at our house because we go to the store for the staples, you know, milk and bread kind of things. The rest of it, you know, we go shopping outside or in the freezer, it seems like. So
that's very cool. You know, I think that probably resonates with a lot of people. Probably people would like to do that.
I think so. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And so part of the idea with the shop here was, gosh, we love doing this. We were really pleased with the product quality and what we're having, what we eat on a regular and daily basis. I wonder if other people, you know, appreciate that. Kind of what you just said. Turns out, yeah, it does. And so we had kind of been thinking about the idea of it for a while, and finally got to the point where it was like, okay, we need to get serious and either cross this off and put it aside or move forward. And so here we are.
The idea of actually launching a butcher shop, you know, an old-fashioned kind of small-town butcher shop.
That's right. Yeah, old-fashioned small-town butcher shop. So everything we do, we make here.
Sausages, you fabricate the meats, and
that's right. Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned the fact that we were growing some of the animals. We still do grow some of them, though we couldn't grow as many as what the shop's demand here is, and what people want. So we buy the live animal. We buy it on the farm usually. We take possession of it on the farm, and we have, you know, kind of a chain of custody from there until till it goes in your bag and home with you, which is a very different model than anybody else.
It is. I'm you know, been sitting here, you know, sitting here trying to think about that, you know, and the fact that, you know, so you're picking up animals off of a farms, local farms, right?
That's right. Yeah, that was important. That was important to me, because when I look across the counter at a customer and I tell them that it's local, first of all, it's antibiotic-free, it's hormone-free, you know, it's been grown in the most natural way possible. I'm the responsible face. I am the face that they have a connection with. And so it's important for me to know where they come from, you know. And I can look at people and go, I know where this animal come from. I can take you there. We can look at it. You'll agree that it's, you know, pretty good and meets these criteria. So
now, what are your criteria?
Well, like I just mentioned, antibiotic, hormone-free, that's a necessity for us. We support modern agriculture in every way possible. It's important to feed the world. This is for maybe a more discerning palate, what we do here, a higher quality. So there are options, right? Everybody has preferences. That's what we're helping to provide. But it became clear to us that was something that customers are concerned with. I don't think we know whether how those things in animal and in the meat that they produce, how they're affecting us. We have no idea. And so it was easy for us to say, well, we're just going to go, we're going to go, you know, aside from that.
Now, how are the animals raised typically?
Yeah. So, just like that, all of our pigs, are free choice feed. So they do get grain, whenever and however often they want. So we like happy pigs. We like to say that all the animals here that we offer, have very good and happy lives, except for one day,
the one bad day, right?
The one bad day. And that's our goal. But they do have access to pasture and outside. And so, that's important, not only from you know, a lot of customers' perspective of welfare and well caring and well being of animals, but then also it really does make a different tasting meat product.
People tend to talk about pork the way it used to taste, maybe that they remember from years ago, you know, and not so. Taste less, maybe.
I think you hit it right on the head. There is chicken as well, right? A lot of chicken and pork have seemingly just over time become carriers for sauce or whatever you want to put on it. And we actually think those things taste good if they're done right and grown the right way. And that's part of what access to the dirt in pasture, you know, does, is it just adds that flavor of, you know, you are what you eat, and that certainly comes through. We're not afraid of the bad F word, and that's fat. So our pork tends to have just a little bit more. I mean, not a lot, but a little dab of the intramuscular fat goes a long way. Helps keep it moist. It helps give it that flavor. I've had a customer here and look at pork chops, and they look different. They're a deeper color. They're more rosy, you know, a darker red color. And I think, well, I don't know if that looks like pork. And I'm like, actually, this looks like pork, you know. So it is interesting to see people's perception and how they view things differently. We're kind of bringing back that old school, you know, old way of doing things, I think, a little bit. And we did it that way. Partially, I think, in the past because we didn't know any better, right? And technology evolves, and so you try different things. Sometimes that it's not right, though. You know, it's just not. It's not what produces the best product. And so we think that we're on to something here, and many other people are too. But you know, we're glad to be a part of that.
So, what has the response been from customers in general? Positive overall?
Yeah, very, very positive. Today already, so I can include today along with every other day that we've been open for the last year and a half. Every day that we've been here, we have at least one new person every day that says, well, I haven't been in yet. So that's, you know, that's still growing. I think there are a lot of trends in food a lot of times, and things come in and go out of vogue. One thing that I think is here to stay, and that's the local kind of farm to fork, farm fresh movement. I think part of that is because you can taste fresh. You know, I people go, well, they say it tastes different. Well, how? And I'm like, it's that, you know, sixth sense, you know, like the one you can't explain, but you know, it's kind of like, if you ever buy your own coffee beans whole and grind them yourself. I mean, there's a, yes, the pre-ground stuff is coffee too, but there's a something extra special sort of at the end of when you do it yourself.
We've been talking with Ryan West of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana. Stay with us for more from Ryan here on WFYI and WFYI.org. Local tastes, especially in the portion of the plate devoted to protein, you might think folks in central Indiana would be pretty predictable. But it's interesting how adventurous they can be and what products pique their interest. So it was great to talk with Ryan West recently, owner and butcher at St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana. Ryan tells us not only how the butcher shop got started and who St. Adrian is, but also about the unusual requests he gets and just how popular rabbit sausage really is. So here we are at St. Adrian Meats in Lebanon. Now, tell me a little bit about the name of the business, for one thing, and maybe about how it got started.
So we come up with the name. St. Adrian is the patron saint of butchers. So it seemed like a good fit. We looked around. We were deciding, does it make sense? Is it right to actually put a physical location? A lot of people were saying, start at farmers markets. You can do that first. It's an easy way in. Well, I've never been one to take the easy way about anything. And if it's not difficult enough, I tend to make it that way. So, it seemed to me like if it's a good idea and people are ready for this product and what we offer, then we need kind of a home base of operation. We make a lot of stuff. Everything that we have in the shop, we make on site. So we buy the live animal off the farm. It actually goes up to Lafayette to a small processor who does the dirty work, I say, for us. And then the whole carcass comes back to us here.
So you get the whole pig?
We get the whole pig, the whole cow, the whole...
The whole cow. Oh, yeah. My goodness. Yeah. Right here.
Right here. Yeah. So we, you know, I tell everyone, we cut, cure, chop, grind, stuff, smoke, everything right here. So that gives us so much flexibility to be able to get a customer anything they want. I mean, if you can think of it, we can do it. And we get some interesting requests sometimes. So, but it's good. We take customer requests for different sausages. In fact, some of our more popular sausages have been ones that customers have requested.
Well, that's kind of cool. What kind of thing?
Yeah, one that immediately jumps out is called Czech sausage. We've got a guy here who lives locally who said, I grew up in Central Texas. There's a big Czech community. Gosh, you could get it at gas stations. You could get it cooked. It was in restaurants. It was everywhere. Czech sausage. Do you think you can make some? And I said, absolutely. You just have to help us get it right at the end of the day. And so we do all kinds of research and come up with Czech sausage. It's a smoked sausage, kind of peppery, a little garlicky. And, boy, people just, it took off, you know. My wife said, I don't know what Czech sausage is, but this is some pretty daggum good smoked sausage. And I said, yeah, that's, you know, it is. You're right. So we do all kinds of things like that to meet what people want.
So, you know, unusual cuts and that sort of thing, people can ask for that kind of stuff?
Yeah, there, you know, few people understand really when you get down into the intricate details of what makes a cut of meat. You know, you can take the same kind of primal big chunk of meat and cut it 100 different ways, and it's 100 different things. And so we kind of have the standard type things, you know, that a lot of people are familiar with and see. But we get people all the time who, you know, I was in Argentina and they cut this way. Do you think you could do that? And I'm like, I think I can do just about anything. So as long as we haven't used it already, there are some real benefits. Obviously, as we've been talking about, to buying local, the quality you just can't surpass. We dry age all the beef, even what goes into the ground beef as a dry aged product. I don't know of anywhere else that does anything like that. It makes the logistics a little more challenging, but you know, I tell people there's only so much filet in a cow. So when you're buying local and spending money, you know, with local farmers and buying their product, we've got to use the whole thing. So there are some challenges. I think we.
How do you do that? How do you make sure you use up all the parts? I know that's something that's a problem chefs face. You know, when, you know, like you said, there's only so much filet, but there's a lot of ground beef, right?
That's right. Yeah, we've kind of taken a multifaceted approach to that to some degree. We work with probably 7 or 8 different restaurants, all the way from a very small private club in Indianapolis to a new pizzeria, Empire Pizzeria up in Kirkland, and a few here in town, the Milky Way, and some in Zionsville. So, you know, that's a great outlet for us to move some of those ground type products, chorizo, sausages, those kinds of things. That certainly helps. On the other side, we realize that there's only so many ribeyes, there's only so much filet, and so our customers are recognizing that too, and they understand. Okay, I'm getting what that means. That I might not always walk in and get exactly what I want. Whatever I get, it's going to be pretty good, and we'll take some suggestions, those kinds of things. We keep a list of people that, hey, when we get the next beef in, when we get the next lamb in, we'll call you and let you know that, you know, fillets are ready, it'll be here on Thursday, you know, kind of a thing. And so, you know, both of those approaches really help us to meet those needs.
That's really nice, you know. What are some of the more unusual cuts that you might have occasionally that people might not be as familiar with?
Well, you know, gosh, that could go a lot of different ways, I suppose. In sausages, at least, we always try to have things that are very familiar, like breakfast sausage or bratwurst. We do what I call some old world sausages, you know, very, very traditional, standard, you know, milk, eggs, those are the binders. We don't use anything else. as well as some more contemporary types of sausage. Like we have a Thai green curry sausage or buffalo chicken, you know. And so just some random things like that. But those are kind of always changing. And so people love to come and just, you know, that I offer to people all the time, hey, you can call ahead. We'll get your order ready. That way, you know, we can make it. We're already asking people to make an extra stop. So we want to help them along. We know it's a fast-paced world. But people are like, I kind of want to look around and see what you have. Gosh, that I tell you, the strangest thing I ever did was a lady from down south, Louisiana, said there's a dish called debris, or griot, it's called. And it's basically all the bits that nobody else is interested in that kind of go together. I mean, suet, tripe, and, you know, glands of different sorts and pancreas. I mean, it was a wild menagerie of things, and I'm pretty adventurous, but I don't even, that one might have even been a little strong for me, so.
Well, you know, I see a lot of things, you know, like lingua tacos, you know, like tongue tacos, you know, things like that on chef menus, or sweetbreads. Mm-hmm. I just, as a matter of fact, just this past weekend had sweetbread tacos and lingua tacos. Are those sorts of options available?
Absolutely, yeah. We beef tongue is I think probably a little more familiar, but we always have pork tongue as well. Might even be my favorite out of the two, and I like both of them quite a bit. We just had some folks in earlier today who picked up pig's cheeks. You know, the cheeks are pretty incredible. Some people are turned off by the notion, but I'm like, we're okay with the rest of it. There's, you know, like, this isn't even, you know, organ meat in any kind of way. Like, this is just good is what this is. But oxtail is a really good one. What's interesting to kind of see is, you know, I'm a fan of cooking and eating anyway. And so you do some research and those kinds of things, where I grew up in a very down home kind of family where we ate those kinds of things. You know, if you put that in your freezer, well, you got to use it all, right? So it's some of the old stuff, old recipes are kind of, you know, becoming new again. And so it's interesting. Oxtail is a great example of that.
I love that. You know, I grew up, you know, with the chicken gizzards, you know, and liver and that sort of thing. But, you know, those aren't nearly as common anymore, you know, and oftentimes I'm not sure that you can even usually, you know, get those things at supermarkets regularly. So I think it's kind of cool that you can, you know, and that you can, you know, try some of those more traditional recipes.
Yeah, we, you know, everything from, you know, another really rare one to see is beef ribs. I mean, whole beef ribs, you know, not short ribs, even though short ribs are kind of hard to find sometimes. But the whole thing, you know, a customer was just asking me the other day about, we used to do whole beef ribs. No, there's not a lot of meat until you get to the end, but they were sure fun and they looked good, you know, and they were great. And I said, well, yeah, if you let us know, we can absolutely do that. So there are a lot of those different kinds of things.
I think that's very cool. I think it's very interesting. And you know, somebody who likes to cook, you know, that it's fun, you know, mm-hmm. to try some of those different cuts. Any other types of things people might not be as familiar with?
We regularly we have rabbit. Here we just brought some goat in. We've had a few customers ask for it because they've traveled, because they've experienced something, because they've watched, you know, one of the many popular cooking shows now where they've seen this stuff. And so we actually brought one of those in. I have figured out with both of those things. We had whole rabbit here for a while. We offered to cut it down for people, and people would come. Not frequently, but somewhat regularly, people would get a whole rabbit. We made sausage out of rabbits, and we couldn't make it fast enough.
Oh, now that's interesting.
So I think there's a, I think when it's kind of pre-made, pre-spiced a little bit. So we did the same thing with the goat, and it's actually people are willing and ready to try it. So I think we've learned that people are willing to try different things and new things. You just have to give it to them, you know, offer it in a form that they're willing to try.
We've been talking with Ryan West of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage in Lebanon, Indiana. The shop is located at 110 West Washington Street, right on the Courthouse Square, or check out stadrianmeat.com. Indianapolis has made great progress in recent years in raising the awareness of local food and how important access to fresh local food really is. Organizations like Pogue's Run Grocer are working for better access to local food for everyone, including those who live in food deserts, areas of the city that are underserved in terms of fresh food. Pogue's Run Grocer, a local co-op grocery store, recently marked 5 years in business. It also just announced that longtime employee Alan Walker will be its new general manager. I caught up with Alan when Pogue's Run was celebrating its 5th anniversary to talk about his perspective on the co-op's success.
Basically, I was near the entry-level parts of the store opening up. I assisted in some of the renovation of the store, actually before we opened. And I came aboard as a full-time employee upon opening. Right now, I'm the customer service manager. And what this store has, what I've seen for me personally, before I became aware of the store, I wasn't really aware of the benefits of healthy alternatives and eating healthy. And all I knew was that things were the way they were, but as I became educated upon the benefits of healthy alternatives, I actually began to see health benefits personally. I lost weight, my complexion, skin became bright, and I've seen a lot of benefits, and I know I'm definitely benefiting right now from eating healthy. And being in this environment I'm in right now, I'm very happy that it came into existence.
So you've been with it from the beginning, from the build out, and how do you feel like the neighborhood has reacted to the co-op? Has it been clearly a positive for the neighborhood? But beyond that, what's been the reaction?
Well, I hear quite often people say, I've been living here for years, and I never knew this store was here. This is neat. This is great. And, you know, they walk in, and they see all the different products we have that you may not see in Kroger or Marsh as much. But they're also starting to become educated as far as the benefits from healthy alternatives, and they're beginning to reap the benefits. We've had several people in our neighborhood who have come in with different ailments, and they come in and they, you know, they'll tell us, well, I have this ailment and I really don't know what to do. My doctor says this, or I just don't know what to do. So we educate them as much as we can. And if we get the information for them, and, I have seen also firsthand how people have benefited and, their ailments have, gone away in a lot of cases and gotten better, and also just becoming aware of what you can do to lengthen your life and your health. People are really excited, and I wasn't really aware until people started coming in that they were really wanting the same things. So it's very exciting. People really love this store, and it's a beautiful thing. It's a wonderful thing. A lot of positive energy.
So there was a real need for this store.
Well, there were stores similar to this throughout the city, different places, and there were people who generally always have had a healthier lifestyle in their approach. A lot of those were part of our founding members. They had a vision. The vision came to fruition, and We really have to give credit to some of our founding members, because they had the vision, they brought the vision, they did shop some of the other stores that are similar to us, and they brought it to the community so that everyone can benefit, and that's really the basis of how we got started. So there was a vision. Some of our locals, again, becoming aware of the benefits of healthy alternatives, and all of us have ailments, and getting the knowledge to correct and overcome those ailments if possible is a beautiful thing. So everyone's really excited. There was some vision initially, like, again, among the original members, but as things developed and grew, so the excitement and the knowledge and the appreciation began to grow, and it's just been on a wave of energy and positivity.
So it's become a real neighborhood asset.
It is, and we know that everyone, that there are some who, are used to different products, and their budget can afford certain products. So we try to provide for everyone. We have other items that people are usually common to. When they shop at other stores, so we try to provide them with basic necessities that they would want to have as well if they were shopping elsewhere. But we still, first and foremost, we try to provide healthy alternatives, but we also try to provide for those people who need what they need, so we try to provide that as well.
We've been talking with Alan Walker, new general manager of Pogue's Run Grocer, located at 2828 East 10th Street. For more information on the local food co-op, go to poguesrungrocer.org. This is Jolene Katzenberger, and you've been listening to Eat Drink Indiana Radio on WFYI HD2 The Point. Thanks for tuning into the show this week, and thanks also to our guests, Jeremy Brown of Nameless Catering, Ryan West of St. Adrian Meats and Sausage, and Alan Walker of Pogue's Run Grocer. And thanks also to producer John Katzenberger for helping to bring you Eat Drink Indiana Radio.